every presidential contest from 1964 until 2016, the candidate who won Ohio also won the presidency. But in 2020, President Joe Biden secured the necessary 270 electoral votes without the backing of the Buckeye State, which left plenty of political watchers asking, is Ohio still an accurate gauge of the national political mood? That remains an animating question for these 2022 midterms. But of course, that's only one reason that so many have taken a keen interest in this year's U.S. Senate contest between Democrat Tim Ryan and Republican J.D. Vance. With control of the Senate balanced on a razor's edge, every contested seat matters. And Ohio has been, well, just listen.
Are you a racist? Do you hate Mexicans? The media calls us racist for wanting to build Trump's wall.
They say you can know a person by their enemies. Well, here comes their bull ads.
I was raised on this street, where my grandma taught me that in America, kids can dream big. But we had something then that Ohio kids don't have today. Safety.
Some people think that they have to agree with their politicians 100% of the time. And I ask these people, are any of you married?
Yeah, this race has been wild. But it isn't the only matchup determining the state's political future. Allow me to direct your attention a little further down ballot to the congressional seat left open by Tim Ryan when he decided to run for Senate. Ohio's 13th Congressional District.
So Ohio's 13th Congressional District is, for the very first time, it's actually going to include all of Akron, which is a major city in northeast Ohio.
This is Anna Staver. She's a political reporter for USA Today Network's Ohio Bureau.
So it's got Akron, and it's just sort of an urban, suburban area in northeast Ohio that's like south of Cleveland.
And in the Ohio 13, two women are vying for the open seat, which means Ohio 13 is a she election. That's what we're calling the 2022 midterm races, where all the candidates in the general election are women. And along with our partners at the Center for American Women in Politics, and with support in part from the Ms. Foundation for Women, we're bringing you these stories. The Ohio 13 might be the most competitive congressional she-election matchup in the country.
So they're both millennial women. Amelia Sykes is the Democrat. She's 36. The Sykes name is an institutional name in Akron.
Amelia's mother, Barbara Sykes, served on city council and in the Ohio House. Her father as a state senator. Indeed, a Sykes has represented some part of Akron, Ohio for more than four decades. Here's Amelia Sykes speaking with NBC affiliate WKYC.
Well, I'm going into this thinking that the people of Northeast Ohio need a fighter, someone who is not afraid to stand up to the powerful and well-connected and who's willing to push against the status quo.
Very much a traditional candidate in the ways in which she's entered into politics.
This is Wendy Smooth. She's a political scientist and a professor of women, gender, and sexuality studies at The Ohio State University.
I've heard on multiple occasions that she considers herself born into politics. And that's a really interesting conversation to have among millennials in terms of being born into politics. But she's taken that traditional stair-step approach that we often see for women candidates who will do many sub-national level races before moving on to national politics. We still see that as a very familiar track for women candidates who somehow aren't taking that same kind of, I woke up this morning and decided I have important things to say and I'm running for the presidency, which we definitely saw with the example of Donald Trump. And I will say that the Trump presidency has changed the way in which many candidates are thinking about their abilities to enter into political office.
To Professor Smooth's point, the Republican challenger in this race has a far less traditional trajectory to becoming a congressional candidate. Here again is USA Today Network's Anna Staver.
Madison Jesiato Gilbert is her Republican challenger. Gilbert is an attorney who worked on the Trump 2020 election campaign. She was Miss Ohio USA in 2014, and she used to have a column about millennial politics called The Millennial Mindset at the Washington Times.
Back in March, Gilbert granted a Women's History Month interview to an adorable fifth grader in the Akron Public Schools named Darshan.
What adversity have you overcome that has made you the leader that you are today?
Well, I'd say the number one thing that I've had to overcome from when I was very young until now is being told, no, you can't do that. No, you aren't good enough to do something. And this is something that when I was young, I was told as a figure skater. And as an older woman, I was told this as, you know, an attorney and as going through my political career. But the one thing that I've continued to do is continue to work hard and to beat those expectations and make sure that people see that you can accomplish anything that you put your mind to.
When it came to seeking the Republican nomination for Congress, Madison Gilbert refused to take no for an answer. And she got a yes from the most powerful endorser in her party.
Gilbert, you know, got the endorsement early on from Donald Trump that sort of catapulted her through the primary and into the general. And she's really taking that sort of approach that we need fresh blood, fresh perspective in Congress, and that as an outsider, she would be the person to deliver.
Anna, is President Trump a benefit or a harm for candidate Gilbert?
You know, that's a really interesting question, because Trump won Ohio both in 16 and 20 by about 8 points. So he's popular in the state generally. But this particular district is about, I believe it's 51% registered Democrat to 47% registered Republican. So it's a very toss-up district. And so it does, I think that negates some of the benefit of President Trump. But at the same time, there are a lot of folks, particularly in the parts of the district that Tim Ryan used to occupy, what we call the union, the blue collar Democrats that left the party and voted for the former president.
Having held office at the state legislative level, Democrat Amelia Sykes has used the campaign to highlight her legislative record and her experience meeting the concerns of a diverse array of constituents.
Sykes is read as a moderate. We're not talking about the kind of insurgent side of the Democratic Party, where you might contrast that, for those of your listeners who know Ohio politics, with a Morgan Harper who challenged Joyce Beatty some years ago, and then also was an early candidate in the primary, who's really bringing that kind of AJC type of approach to pushing the Democratic Party. Amelia Sykes isn't that candidate. Amelia Sykes has been much more, again, of a moderate, but has the type of voting record that aligns very similarly with a Tim Ryan, who formerly held parts of that district.
So some of the things that she's had signed into law are issues surrounding women in particular. So she had a bill come to law that allows victims of dating violence to get protective orders during the pandemic. She really pushed to make sure that Black Ohioans got needed resources, things like healthcare. In Ohio, we actually have real disparities in maternal outcomes and maternal mortality and infant mortality. And she's been really focused on that. She talks a lot about high-speed internet, which you think might be like a rural Ohio problem, but it turns out there's a number of like places within cities, particularly like lower socioeconomic places within cities, where there's no access to high-speed internet. Like, she's really focused on a lot of kitchen table issues, particularly for communities of color.
Republican Madison Gilbert is a public figure with name recognition, but she doesn't have a legislative record. And that just might be valuable as part of a larger strategy of avoidance, a strategy that was on display last week with the Akron Beacon Journal.
So they asked, obviously, for Q&As with the candidates. And she had questions about, like, if she believed Trump lost the 2020 election. And instead, she wrote a paragraph slamming like President Biden and his policy. She never clearly answered where she came down on that. She was asked about January 6th, and she talked about the needs to address violence generally. She was asked about abortion, and she didn't really say where she came down on things like exemptions for rape and incest or whether life begins at conception. Like, she's talked generally about supporting those policies, but she's been very careful not to sort of dive into the details on those issues.
So I think that's a strategy that's really unique for that particular district. We have a lot of interest in that area, of course, in terms of kind of blurring the lines between what it means to be a conservative and what it means to be a Trump surrogate or a Trump supporter. There's, you know, the hope of pulling those who are election deniers with that conversation, as well as those who would take a more moderate Republican stance in terms of thinking about the last election, as well as a number of social issues. But I think one of the things that we have to think about is these are two millennial candidates. Both are being cast as the future of their political parties. One of the areas that both of these candidates kind of sit in this space is around women's health and women's health issues. If they are going to appeal to younger voters, that message around women's health, and in particular in a state like Ohio, the issue of abortion is front and center for those young millennial voters.
Now, success for both of these women may rely as much on the Vance Ryan Senate smackdown as it does on their own campaign strategies.
Sykes does kind of attach to that Tim Ryan brand, that kind of sensible Democrat, that kind of labor-centric Democrat. She comes across as a very polished politician, which is a little bit different than the kind of shirt tails out approach that Tim Ryan carries, but that tells us about the kinds of gender dynamics of elections. She's much more kind of polished presentation of a candidate. But in her policies, she's much akin to the Tim Ryan brand and is positioning herself as having that kind of benefit of coattail effects of the Ryan space there.
And we're finding a surprising number of DeWine Ryan voters, people who are voting for a Republican governor and a Democratic senator. And that sort of shows the appeal that, you know, running as this populist economic moderate is having, and it is potential that it could be benefiting Sykes more so than actually it may end up benefiting Tim Ryan. You know, if Tim Ryan overperforms Hillary Clinton or Joe Biden here in Ohio by 7 points, he's still going to lose. But that enthusiasm could make the difference, say, in the 13th congressional district.
All right, stick with us. We're not done in Ohio yet. We've got more on the Ohio 13th Congressional District she-election, a race where one of the candidates
has given birth on the campaign trail. And I think that's absolutely fantastic when we want to talk about what is possible for women.
Back in a moment. It's The Takeaway.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.
We're continuing our talk about the highly competitive congressional she-election in Ohio's 13th House District with our guests.
Anna Staver, a political reporter for USA Today's Network, Ohio Bureau.
Wendy Smooth, I am a professor of women's gender and sexuality studies at The Ohio State University.
Now, Democrat Amelia Sykes and Republican Madison Gilbert are both young women who are seen as potential future leaders in their parties. But does this similarity neutralize gender as a factor in this race?
I'm always of the belief that gender can never be fully neutralized in campaigns. So I find that question entertaining. So definitely we have particular versions of womanhood, of appropriate performances of womanhood. I think if we were to do comparisons across these candidates in terms of presentation of the candidates, a very kind of slick, very well-nuanced presentation of femininity is on display with both candidates. The other thing that I'll say that's really interesting about women in politics in this particular race is that Gilbert has given birth on the campaign trail. And I think that's absolutely fantastic when we want to talk about what is possible for women candidate.
I mean, she wasn't literally on the campaign trail, right? Like,
right,
she went to
sure.
a hospital. And I was like, whoa, that is so shocking.
Well, you know, if we think about 5-7 years ago, we would have counseled this candidate at her, or the operatives would have counseled this candidate that her campaign would be untenable. If she was pregnant on the campaign trail, if she was due to give birth during the course of the campaign. And so I really do marvel at what that means in terms of the American public's or Ohio's capacity to understand the capabilities of women and their abilities to do multiple things and to grow their families while they're also seeking political office.
So there's a part of me that loves that. There's also a part of me that is like, huh, I wonder if in this new Dobbs post Roe v. Wade moment, also a way of saying, hey, look, you know, here's if you're the right kind of woman, if you're a good woman, if you're a then you can do it all. And having a child won't be any kind of barrier. And of course, that ignores all of the other pieces that make possible that extraordinary capacity to run for office and become a brand new parent.
Oh, absolutely. I think, I mean, when I spoke to this notion of these two candidates are both speaking very loudly around women's health and women's choices, I think that's very much a kind of component. We know that Gilbert is also a pro-life candidate, though has been a bit more slippery in some of the interviews across the campaign cycle. And so I think that this is truly read as a moment in which choice is very much on as a part of the conversation that's happening in this race with this candidate, with giving birth as a candidate, a kind of, as you said, you can do it all. And so there's no limitation. And having a child is not a limitation. And that can hit in various ways in a campaign.
Gilbert just gave birth to a little baby boy who looks adorable from the photos online. And you know, it's interesting, you know, it's not too long ago that we had the first sitting U.S. senator give birth while in office. And, you know, it's not that far back. I can remember a few years ago, I used to work out in Oregon. And there was a candidate there. She's now the Secretary of State, Shamia Fagan. And she was pregnant while running. And she said people actively discouraged her from running while pregnant. And as a mother of two girls who very jokingly used to say, like, I hope I don't, you know, give birth on the legislative floor, like, because, like, we're down there, too. I was pregnant through some legislative sessions. You know, making that work, it can be challenging. But yeah, we never talk about how male lawmakers who have babies and come back to work manage that balance. It's a lot of conversation around how female lawmakers manage that balance. And, you know, I do think, though, that it's worth pointing out that Gilbert and her husband's in the NFL. They are very affluent. They're going to have a lot of resources to help her manage that, which is far more challenging for a lot of working women.
And then just a final question for both of you, because this is part of our She Election series. Why does it matter for women to run for office?
Oh, gosh, I can take the question first. I think it's important to have different perspectives at the table, you know, particularly as we talk about women's issues like abortion, like maternal mortality. I think it's so important to have someone who's carried a baby in those conversations, who's perhaps had a miscarriage in those conversations, who's maybe had an abortion or talked about what that looks like for their family. I think that diversity of perspective really builds better legislation, in my opinion. And I also think it helps us understand each other better, which is sort of the goal of government in a really Pollyanna-ish sort of way, right? Like it's how a bunch of different people come together and decide how to live together. And if you can understand where each other's coming from, then you make better rules for everyone. And that's my very glass half full feeling about it.
I love that optimism, Anna, and I share so much. So much of those kinds of like beliefs that if we elect more women, we would get more things done. And also realizing that women are not a monolith. And so I'm always challenging myself around those questions. But one of the things I'll say is that it's also representation matters. Representation is an important component of our democratic political system. People have to feel connected to the decisions that are being made about them. And we also have to think about the importance of these she elections on the next generation of political actors.
Professor Wendy Smooth of The Ohio State University and Anna Staver of USA Today Network's Ohio Bureau. Thank you both for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you.